Today is the Royal Affair with David Cassidy, and David has just finished his matinee performance of Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, and we were waiting behind the stage door. You would know the place went crazy. There was screaming and cheering and yelling. David Cassidy is a very amazing young man. He's probably done more in his 30 years than most people do in a life. I'm not going to tell goodies, but I will give you a few hints. Think about someone selling over 20 million records. Most of you are familiar with the Partridge Family. Hundreds of concerts. And if this weren't enough, David also breathes and trains and races horses. And just to top it all off, I called my daughter, who's a freshman at a university here, to wish her well on her exams, and she couldn't talk because all the kids had just come back from a snack bar. Honestly, this is the real truth. She didn't know anything about the fact that I was going to see you today, and she said, we have the greatest break. What did you do? She said, all of us got together, and we listened to David Cassidy's records. I think I love you from the Partridge Family, and I said, you're kidding.
Oh, my
she
gosh.
Said, oh, no. We love him. And then, of course, when I told her that I was coming over to David Cassidy, I think you were the first person that I've interviewed that my truth approved of.
Thank you. That's a wonderful compliment. A wonderful compliment. I must say that I'm very flattered by that. I mean, please extend my best wishes to your daughter.
Thanks to all the other brand new students. You know, David, when I was thinking about you and thinking about your life in terms of my own family, you were not even 20 years old when you really started to hit it big.
Mm-hmm.
How did all that happen?
Well, it happened because I was rather a determined young man who had an opportunity. When I was in New York, I left high school when I was 18, and I went back to came back to New York to study, and I got myself an agent, and I took a part-time job in the textile industry, and I landed a job in a Broadway show called The Fig Leaves Are Falling, and Dorothy Loudon played my mother. And it was not a great show, but a man from CBS Film saw me in the show. It was stayed open a week. We previewed for a few weeks in New York and played in Philadelphia. Then a man from CBS Films in Los Angeles saw me in the show and said, you're perfect for this film. I want to fly you out. And I said, well, I can't do that because I'm doing the show. Anyway, the show closed, and 2 days after it closed, I flew out to L.A., made a screen test for this film that was never made, but he consequently showed the screen test to some people at Universal, and from that, I did numerous guest shots on television, and towards the end of the year, after doing about 8 or 9 or 10 leads in these guest shots when I was 19, I did a pilot for the Partridge Family. We sold, and about 6 months later, I went in and made records, and prior to the show being on the air, I had a number one record in America, so...
That's all at 19 years old.
Yeah, or just about 19 or 20, and it was staggering. It was mind-boggling for me.
Especially, you were living in New Jersey, weren't you?
Well, no. I had moved out...
to the coast?
Back out to the coast, yeah. I was brought up in New Jersey, about 40 minutes from Manhattan, in a small town called West Orange, with my mother and my grandparents, and I did not live a showbiz Hollywood, a Hollywood showbiz kind of a childhood. I lived real normal, very solid, very good values that were instilled in me, and I think that they probably saved my life. When I went through these 5 years of doing concerts and kind of hysteria and teen mania and all of that, and the success to such an extent, I really got lost from it, and because of it. And it was a very overwhelming experience for someone at the age of 19 to be dealt.
And to have it all. Now, was it because of your dad, Jack, that you became interested in show business in the first place?
I suppose that, you know, my father and my mother, Evelyn Ward, who was an actress, right, they were both, when I was a kid, were both struggling actors, and I remember seeing my father on the stage in 1953. I remember seeing him in a show called Wish You Were Here. I can remember to this day seeing him.
I remember that too.
Seeing him on that stage and thinking in the theater, standing up and saying, this is what I want to do. That is what I wanted to do, and I never had a doubt about what I was going to do. There was no question. And I remember driving to, you know, through the tunnel, Holland Tunnel, and going over to Jersey with my mom on the way home, just being really excited. I remember her saying to her, this is what I want to do, Mom. Now, I was 3 years old, and she said, fine, you can do that when you finish high school. So I want you to know that I graduated high school, and 2 weeks later, I went back to New York and did it. So it was, I suppose, fate. But I never had any question all through school that's what I wanted to do, and that's what I was going to do. And I started working when I was in high school with the L.A. Theater Company and, you know, and drama and so forth. And I always, I must tell you that I feel very fortunate and blessed to be able to be here and to be able to do this, what I do every day or 8 times a week, and to get that kind of response that you talked about, to have people cheer and to move them.
And to feel really happy.
Oh, well, that's what it's about. But the experience of performing is, it's about that relationship between you and them and getting to them and lifting them up. I feel very blessed.
We're going to go to some messages. My guest is David Cassidy, and I'm Joan Hamburg. Stay with us.
Lying in a dump. I mean a dump in Queens. Not the Queens is exactly
this place.
This particular place in Queens. So all of you out there in the Queens, please, it's a lovely community. I have been there many times since, and it's not all that bad. This particular hotel, and after coming out of the hysteria, staying at the focal point of 21,000 people that were locked in that building, screaming, being thrown into the trunk of a Toyota and taken out and driven to Queens, and being left in this dive, alone was like, it was shock. I'm telling you, I sat there shaking, going, what am I doing? What just happened? What am I doing here? Why is this going on? And it's a very, you know, not to dwell upon the...
Yeah, they're happy. You're happy,
Captain.
Thank you.
For the second time.
Learning from listening to you. I feel so fortunate to have experienced what I have experienced in my life. I mean, on a professional and a personal level, and to have done all that I have done, and, you know, in 14, 15 years, you know,
I mean, you're young.
You know,
do whatever you wanted to, but during that period, you weren't forgotten. I mean, you were a household word for all that. People just didn't understand why.
Right.
Of course, now we understand why.
Yeah.
But what did you do? Did you long to go back once you were...
No, I didn't. I really wanted to stop anything. I wanted to stop doing interviews. I wanted to stop doing television. I wanted to stop doing everything except playing music. I did still play music, and I did a lot of writing in that period of time. And I did a lot of soul searching. I did a lot of thawing out. I started relating to people again. I started getting in touch with other people. I started having a relationship with a lady who I married. And, I mean, it took me 3.5 years to get to the point where I wanted to work again. It was at least 3 years until I got to that point. And I found when I called my agency up and said, hey, you know, I really want to work again. They really had very little time for me. They said, you know, it's yesterday's news, who cares? I mean, you know, what's going on now is X, Y, and Z. And I felt very shunned by
alone again,
a lot of people. And I thought, you know, we need a lot of these people millions and millions of dollars. And it would seem ridiculous, but I can't get them now to answer my phone. They could call me back, you know? And I found myself very frustrated for a while, and a friend of mine who was a producer called me up and said, I have a great idea, and I think I want you to do this film for television. So I can't, you're the only person I want to do it. I know you haven't done any television. I know you haven't wanted to work. I said, well, I wanted to work, I just have been unable to find the right vehicle and the right thing for me to do.
A word from our sponsors, and then back to David Cassidy. Gratifying to see a big chunk of your income go to Macy's Health Group Apothecary Shop in the... We are a rice family, and I tell you that Carolina's Extra Long Grain Rice is the best, but you can use it for everything. Carolina's Extra Long Grain Rice is the best quality rice value in the New York City market today. They use the best ingredients, the best of the crop. Then they process it so that you get full body texture from every package. If you cook rice, you know you can trust Carolina. It's tender, fluffy, delicious every time. But because Carolina rice is being featured at special low prices everywhere rice is sold, it will cost you less than a nickel a serving to put tender, delicious Carolina rice on your family's table. Less than 5 cents a serving for top quality Carolina rice. Now, who can resist? All good It's Carolina Extra Long Grain Rice. It's the best rice and the best bargain in years.
Take the turn off Main and you're on Main Street in Flemington, New Jersey. And there it is, a Victorian mansion. Park your car, and as you enter, notice the beautiful antiques. Persian carpets, gilt mirrors, armoires, a winding banister leading to three floors of specially decorated rooms. You've arrived at Flemington's factory slack rack. Linen's fashion outlet with the unsuitable name. Unsuitable, because owner Hal Bloodworth sells more suits than slacks. This spring, he's featuring in traditional styles, tropical English worsted suits, sport coats in natural fibers, and lightweight jackets for sportsmen or a spectator. All this luxury and quality at affordable prices. So come to the men's outlet with the unsuitable name. Flemington's Factory Slack Rack, the beautiful mansion at 24 Main Street. Open 7 days a week.
David Cassidy is my guest, and David is in New York because he's Joseph, and Joseph of the amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat is playing at the Royal Theater, and something all of you should see. But as we left you for commercials, David was just rearing again and deciding it was time to work. Surrounded by all those people he made rich, which is always the way it is. You know, he was dead long after the
king. Yeah, I wouldn't say all of them, but they were really kind of, you know, they weren't really interested in, at this point, in doing anything for me. You know, it was like, oh, I'm moving upward, and, you know, too bad, you know, sorry that you left the business, too bad, kid. You know, give us a call sometime. It was a lot of, I felt, is this what this is about? I mean, we go through and we have relationships with people, and I was very, very disappointed, and I felt very hurt by it. And a friend of mine did call me up, a producer by the name of Mel Swope, who produced the Pleasure Family for a while, and he always believed in me as an actor and knew that what was going on. He had seen his work of mine before I did the Partridge Family. That was different kinds of work. And he called me and said, I have this great project that I'm producing Police Story now, and we're doing 8 2-hour police stories. And there is a script for you. I know you haven't done any television, but would you consider it? And I said, of course, I've been waiting to find something good to do. So he sent me this script, and it was called A Chance to Live, and it was a great vehicle for me, a wonderful, very sensitive script, and I was nominated for an Emmy from it, and it was one of the best pieces of work I had to do, and I think it turned a lot of people's heads around about me as to who I was, and maybe I wasn't just a cardboard cutout, and maybe I just wasn't on the back of Kellogg's Rice Krispies. Maybe I wasn't just a bubblegum card or a comic book. And I think that it did me an enormous amount of good. And you know, I mean, we wait for opportunities to where we can stretch and we can grow. And I was very fortunate to have gotten that. From it, a television series was spawned, which I did for a season. But the film that I did for television, the PR movie for television, was really one of the better pieces of work that I have done. I got very interested shortly after in doing theater again, and it got me interested in working again. It got me interested in my career again. So I started doing some theater. I started doing plays, not necessarily. I've done some regional theater. I did Tribute, which was a play that I wanted to do for myself. There's an enormous amount of personal satisfaction about doing that. And I felt like I worked a lot of the stuff I had with my father in that play.
Yeah, that would be a perfect vehicle for that.
You know, and I wanted to do it before I got too old. And
yeah, your father was alive during these years.
Yeah, you know, my father's been dead since 76.
So you had stopped, though.
I had stopped, right. So during these years, he was not around. And,
had he approved of your exciting career?
He did. I think he found it I know he found it some ambivalence in it, because I know he was enormously proud of me and loved me very much. He also was very frustrated by his own career that didn't bloom into the last few years of his life, and he was such a talent. It was really because of him that I'm here today, that I'm in this business, and I thank God that I got some of the gifts that he had. I feel very fortunate to have known him as a man also. He was a very terribly excited, terribly intense, extremely creative, and he was an amazing artist and an amazing man. So I feel very fortunate to have just known him, let alone to have been his son. It was intimidating being his son, because he was such a powerful, magnetic man, and he was very charismatic and extremely strong. And it's difficult, like a lot of other people, I'm sure, would not have had the same problem. My brothers had the same problem with him. He was the man of the house. And when he spoke, the earth trembled. I can remember hearing that voice, David, going, yes, Dad. And we as sons in relationships with our father, I think we never, even though we physically grow up and we are emotionally grown up to a certain extent, there's a part of us that are always little boys with our dads. At least I feel that. I'm
looking for that approval.
Yeah, always looking for that approval. Looking to say, I love you. You were wonderful. You were great. And my father gave us that, and he gave me that. And I'm glad that he got to see my success, and he really got to enjoy a lot of it. I think it also was frustrating for him to a certain extent, because he was such a talent and he had worked so hard. And he watched his wife, Shirley, who at 19 became an enormous movie star out of the chorus. And I think it made him just ask why.
Oh, I think for Shirley Jones, for you.
Yeah, I think that this was a long, hard-fought battle to make it to the top. And I think he did get there. He was certainly one of the most well-loved and respected people. And it's because of him that I'm here in this business, and here on Broadway now. And I feel so many people come up to me and embrace me, saying, I knew your father, and I see you up on that stage, and it's like seeing him. It's remarkable.
How did it when you were
too? I don't think about it, but so many people tell me that it's like that. I mean, Shirley came and saw the show. Shirley Jones came and saw me in the show on Friday, a week ago. And she came backstage and went, I can't believe it. I'm very flattered by that. I can only be flattered by that.
Your mother must be thrilled too.
She is. She's coming into town actually this weekend. So I'm having my family, and most of my family lives back here. From my father's and my mother's side, and hopefully they all will come and see me by the time that I'm done with the show.
There's more, but first these messages, and then David Cassidy.
The celebrity imported ham is Talked about me earlier about having the values that I have.
The insights, because
because a lot of people see that line. And, you know, I think almost everyone in life at some point that foot goes over the line a little bit and pulls back and then it goes over.
Yeah.
But yours is always, you're back.
I wouldn't say that. I must be quite frank to you, and I would not say that. I went through some pretty wild days when I left this business, and I found myself in search of trying to insulate myself from what was really going on, from the pain. I don't want to sit and dwell on the negatives of all of that and what that experience was like, because most of the experience, as I said before, that I recommend, most of it's all wonderful and it's good and it's about helping people. It's very kind. It does heal, I think. Maybe not all of it, but it heals.
So David, is it scary for me to say that you could be so young to have done so much and changed people's lives, like you yourself, and everyone forgot you because you were so busy doing things for them through your art or through whatever. Is it scary to take chances now?
No. No, I found it. That's what it's about for me. It's about doing things that people think that I can't do, and taking chances and taking risks. I think in my life, I'm rewarded every time I think I take a risk. I'm rewarded. So I get to the edge of a cliff, and we're all so reluctant to jump because we're afraid that we're not going to be able to fly. And in truth, we do fly. And I feel that every time I hesitate, that I think, no, I can't do this. I limit myself, I force myself, I convince myself to do it, and I'm rewarded for it, you know. Coming here to New York to do this show,
how did this happen, by the way?
Well, it happened because Jeff Buckley called me, and he was very interested in the deal, and I met with him, and I was living a wonderful lifestyle at a farm raising my horses, and the weather was grand, and my life was grand, and I decided not to do it. I said, no, I really don't want to move to New York, and, you know, I've got settled here, and it's just great, and got some really good things going on here. I'm going to make a record, and, you know, this is what I want to do, and I went to sleep, and as hokey as this sounds, I promise you it's the truth. There was something called the actor's nightmare that I had 2 nights in a row. And I woke up shaking and trembling, and I became a horrible guy. And to be around me those 2 days after I decided not to do this, I was misery. And I just realized what it was about was, you know, I made an error here. You know, my subconscious was telling me, son, you have made an error, and it's time that we do something about this if it's not too late. So I called him on the phone and said, look, I reconsidered this, and I didn't want to come back here for 6 months or a year and uproot my whole life. So I was thinking, I'm like, calm down. Things were calm, and also things were good. I mean, a lot of things were in the offering, and, you know, I've got some very exciting things that I'm going to do when I'm finished with this, and they're in the works now, and I just had to put on hold, but I felt it was such an opportunity and something that I wanted to do. So I called them back, and Jeff Buckley and Susan Rose, and I came into New York, and they said, we'd love to have you. And I said, well, I'd love to see it. So I came back and moved back here. I have an apartment in Manhattan. And lo and behold, I'm a native New Yorker.
Here you are.
After a brief stint of about 15 years on the coast, David's back here with us in New York.
I'm going to talk to David in just a minute. Stay with us.
What if we were daydreaming? What if we were daydreaming more? And I'm lost in a daydream. I'm dreaming about my family that you're.
David, we only have a few minutes left, but how come horses?
Well, I'll tell you, during those years in the early 70s, when all of that madness was going on, I became friends with a camera
got me interested. I had always been very interested in it. It's a long story to tell you how it my interest in it, but I had always had been fascinated by horses and horse racing, as a matter of fact. It's a long story. I won't get into how it happened, but I started doing a lot of reading and doing a lot of reading about breeding of thoroughbreds, and I found that it was a wonderful escape and a balance for me. And I after probably researching thousands of volumes of American and European thoroughbred breeding books, and I felt very connected to it. And I went out and with a friend of mine who was also interested in a cameraman, I bought a couple of horses, and I started from there. I started in breeding, and it's been a great balance, and it has now become a very good business for me, and it's something that when I am not doing this, my interest in my life is about that.
And you have a fiancé who's also very involved.
I do indeed. We have, I don't know, maybe 50 thoroughbreds between us in different various ages. I mean, we have mares and we have foals. This is just foaling season, and we've got a number of horses at the track. We've won a few races lately, and we've got a whole good crop of two-year-olds that are coming up.
Maybe a derby someday.
Well, we've got a very, very good colt that, he's a good two-year-old, and at this age, you never know. You're always hoping, and you always dream, but I have to say that more than anything else in my life is something, if you ask me, what in this world would you want? I would like to win the Kentucky Derby. I would like to own and breed the owner of the Kentucky Derby. That would be, if you say it's an Academy Award to me, I'd say, I'd love that. I mean,
but the Derby first?
Oh, yeah. My dreams and my, all of, when I am not doing this, and my energy and my thoughts are about, it's about that. I think that I get more of a high and more of a thrill from that than just about anything other than walking out on the stage on Broadway and doing the show. I mean, it is an incredible high, and it's just a wonderful release for me. I feel like it's I'm going to be doing this the rest of my life, and I know an awful lot about it, and I kept it very, very low profile. I never discussed it because it was mine and it was private. People in the horse business did not relate to me as a famous star, an idol, and none of that. They dealt with me and respected me as a horseman. So I have very good friends in Kentucky who I go and see, and I have horses in Kentucky. We have a farm in California, and we've got horses at the racetrack. I think I'm going to bring a couple of horses back, a couple of two-year-olds back here, and roll them at Belmont or Saratoga this summer just for fun.
So that's really exciting. So if we gave you a magic wand,
yeah,
the Derby would be first, and right after the race, you'd run to some theater somewhere.
That would be it. I mean, I cannot think of anything more satisfying than that. If you gave me that, I could say, okay, well, that's it. I mean, I guess I've had my share of thrills in this world. I won't ask for another thing, I promise.
I'm going to come back and find out. Okay, and if a Cassidy horse runs at the Derby, I'm going to take a $2 bet.
Look for us next year.
Thank you, David. Thank you.
This is WR New York, the heart of New York. The time signal exactly 1 o'clock.
You must work the worry with why the sudden desire to make yourself out.
Well, the truth is, Chris, I'm here at my desk.
I'm still going.
Yes, I can hardly wait. We'll be leaving on Saturday right after a brand new previous wedding. In fact, we just have to see Reggie Merchant's final arrangements. What are you doing today?
Oh, funny games at headquarters. It'll shake down this sweet little...